Okay, so hi, my name is Sue. I recovered from compulsive eating, anorexia, and bulimia. Okay, so I think I'll just start off from the beginning. So I've been in recovery as of December in for 40 years. It's hard to believe to say that, really. Because when I first came around, I didn't think I'd make it a week. I was so really sick from this illness, really sick. So anyway, let me go back a little bit. So I hit bottom. I had problems in college with food, but it was more like, didn't really understand. It wasn't all out compulsive eating. It was like I was a problem, eater. Anyway, then I graduated college, and then when I was in college, I used to go to Al-Anon meetings with my friend. My father was like a high functioning alcoholic. So, and she told me that she went to OA and I had problems with food. So then I went to an OA meeting while I was in college. And then when I went there, I was like, oh my God, these poor people, they're really, really sick. But I wasn't that bad yet, So I left college, I went to work, and then, the binging started getting really bad. And I remembered how my friend said that she had gone to OA. So I thought to myself, you know what? Let me go. Let me go. I was in New York. I said, let me go to the New York meetings and see what that's about. I still wasn't ready yet though, So I would go into a meeting, I would hear the meeting, I would leave. People would say, oh, give me a hug or let me have your number or whatever. I'd be like, oh my gosh, who are these people? I don't even know who they are. And they're asking me for my number, that it was very strange. But anyway, time went on and it was getting worse and worse. But I was in such denial about really how bad off I was. And then I hit bottom on the night of my birthday, December 11th, 40 years ago. And I really was at death's door. I was no longer, I'd walk out of the meeting, I would binge. People would say, oh, make a phone call. If you feel like you're going to binge, just make a phone call. And I would make the phone call. I'd binge before the phone call. I'd binge after the phone call. So the phone calls, can't stop obsession. Human beings cannot stop obsession. Only God can remove that obsession. So on the night of my birthday, I was at bottom. I was lying in my bed, totally at bottom. I had just binged. I was so sick. And all I did was cry out to God and said, God, please help me. And I had this thought, like, get up out of the bed. How did I get out of that bed? I have no idea. It was only God, get me out of that bed and go back downtown and go to the meeting. So I did. So that's how bad it got. I was on the night of my birthday and I'm by myself, just in this depths, like a drug addict in the bed, and just had compulsively ate. So anyway, I went to the meeting, and then when it came time for me to speak, I was hysterical crying. There was a lot of sick people there, but there I heard this woman who sat across from me. She said I had recovered from this illness. So that's all I heard. So I was like, oh my God, I gotta go talk to this lady. So I said, I went up to her and I said, I'm really desperate. I said, would you sponsor me? So she said to me, well, I don't know where you're at, so I can't sponsor you until I know if you're ready to go. I said, fine, tell me what to do. So she told me I had to read the big book of AA. I had to underline all the must and have to's in the book, and then I had to turn over my food. Now, I wasn't so crazy about wanting, they kind of irked me to say, oh my God, I got to weigh and measure all my food. But you know what? At this point, I was willing to do it. And it was so interesting when I look back at that time. When I walked out of that meeting, I basically said, thank you, God, because I think I have just gotten the best birthday present that I could ever get. So I just started from there. I was really scared. I didn't know if I would make it 5 days. When people would say, oh, I have 5 days, I have 30 days, I have 2 years, I was devastated. I didn't think I'd make it through the week, So, people said, just keep your head down one day at a time. And so that's where it all started. The next day when I woke up, I was so desperate, I think, and I was willing to do anything. The obsession had been lifted to eat compulsively. I definitely had a spiritual experience. And the big book explains that sometimes it happens fast, and then for some of us, it's a little bit slower. So for me, it definitely happened fast. It didn't mean that I didn't have problems. It didn't mean that I didn't have struggles in recovery. There were a lot of hard things I had to face, especially in my fourth step. But I was willing to do it, you know. So I took the first step. Definitely had the first step in place before I got there. I definitely was powerless over food, and it had made my life unmanageable. I was everything that they talk about in the big book. They said, putting aside the alcohol, what was our problem? We were prey to misery and depression, couldn't make a living, didn't feel real help to other people. That was my dilemma, right? I was living in that spiritual malady, you know, of ego and self-centeredness and everything that they listed in that paragraph. So then came the second step. So it came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. So I really didn't think that I was insane. I mean, I know people said it, but I just went along with them, like, all right, if they want to think it's insanity, fine. But my friend said to me one day, he said, you know, you should really look up the definition of insanity. And I did. And one of the definitions said the inability to take responsibility for your life. Well, if that wasn't me, that was me in spades. I said, yes, I am insane. Because I knew eventually I wouldn't be able to take care of myself. I would end up on someone's couch. I wouldn't be able to work. And I had insane thinking around food. You know, I had the insane thinking that, you know, somehow someday I'm gonna beat the game. And every time I was pounding on that bar. So what my sponsor had me do, and I had gone through a couple of sponsors, by the way. She had me keep a prayer log and see that God was in my life. So I would ask God in the morning to help me with something that I had to face. And then I started seeing that at the end of the night, I had a right to see, like, what were my results for the day. And I really saw the results. I started feeling a lot happier, which I wasn't before. The obsession had been removed. I really felt like there was hope for the future, which I never felt that way before when I was in the illness. I had no hope for the future. So I did come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. He was restoring me to sanity in so many areas of my life. It wasn't just about the food. So the third step, my sponsor told me, it is a decision. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. So I got down on my knees, I did the prayer, and I had another like mini spiritual experience, you know, because my sponsor said, Sue, it's just like a decision to move forward. Okay. And it's either going to go forward or you're going to go backwards. I wanted to go forward because I already started experiencing a lot of the promises. I wanted to be happy again, you know, and it's funny because that first night that I went to the meeting, I went to a meeting the second time, like the next night or so, and it was a big book trivia meeting in New York. I walked into that room, McBurney YMCA in Manhattan, and the room was filled, but I felt that electricity that they talk about in A Vision for You, the place was filled with people, and I also felt the recovery. I felt it. I remember sitting there at the meeting saying, oh my God, and these people are laughing and joking around about the crazy things they did in the illness. And I was so devastated by it and so serious about everything. I just wanted to be able to be happy again. I remember sitting there saying, I just want to be able to be happy again, you know? Anyway, so I took the third step. Then I had to go on to my fourth step. So in my fourth step, I did all my resentments. I analyzed my resentments. I saw where I was at fault in the last column. It was a very difficult step. It took me a long time to get to it. I had a hard time really seeing where I was at fault. It took a while to start to really dig down. I think it was because I came from an alcoholic family. where people would just beat each other up. My father would be like, "Oh, you're not never good enough. You're never good enough." So that last column was very difficult for me to see. But my friends would always remind me, "You know what, Sue? You're just like you're like an orange, and you're just getting that peel off your back. You're trying to get this illness off your back. It's not you're a good person." You know, someone said to me many years ago, "You're not a good per a bad person getting good. You're a sick person getting well." Okay, so it wasn't that I was bad because I had stuff in that last column. I was just sick. I was looking back at the way I was, even if that looking back was a day ago. I'm looking back at the way I was while I was in the illness in that fourth column. Okay, so I did that. Then I went and told my sponsor my whole story, the fifth step. I revealed stuff. I had ego deflation at great depth. I told her stuff that I never told anyone. Okay, and then I became ready to have all this removed. And then I remember this. I remember exactly where I was when I took that seventh step. There was a break during one of the meetings I was at, and I went into this room on the side. I knelt down and I said the seventh step prayer, and I asked God to remove all my character defects. And I remember walking into that room, back into the meeting, and it was like it was the first time in so many years that I felt like one with other people, right? My ego was smashed. I felt close to God. I just felt peace. It was so beautiful. So the eighth step was, writing up my amends list. I had to, go through back to my fourth step and make a list of all people that had harmed. And then I was willing to go back and make amends to them. So I went through my fourth step. I wrote down people. I wrote down what I thought I hurt. And then I discussed it with my sponsor because in some situations, some situations in my life, it was best that I didn't go back to that person. It may cause more harm than good, right? I was willing to do whatever it took, but I was guided in a very good way that some situations were not good. Like if I was with a guy and I cheated on him, and it's not good to go back and say, "Oh, by the way, you didn't know this," things like that. So it's good to have someone that you could bounce stuff off on. I went back, the ninth step, I went back and I made all my amends to people. And some situations I did not want to do it, but I did. I went back also and looked at my financial amends I owed. I didn't pay taxes. Like I waitressed, there was a lot of money under the table. So I cleared up my financial situation and dishonesty. And I owed some people money and I had to pay that back. And then 10, 11, and 12 is really, taking stock of my life. And I try to do that during the day in my situation. So when I cross someone and I'm not nice to them, I apologize. Or if I'm, off in some way, I make the apology and I make the amends right there. And then the 11th step, is, seeking through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. That's what I do in the morning. And then I have set prayers that I say during the day. Not always. I mean, I don't always do all the prayers. I try to do the ones that that are based on my faith. And then I do the 12th step. I pray and meditate and I ask God. I get up in the morning and say, "Okay, God, I'm here. I'm barely awake. is there anything that you want of me this day? Other than the things that I have to do." And then what I do during the day is I try to keep conscious contact with God, asking him for the next steps, right? What's next? What's next? And then I pause when I feel like I'm not sure if I should do this or that. I pause and you get answers, And the 12th step is exactly what I'm doing today. And I've been doing it for 40 years, is carrying the message to someone else. And then practicing it in my affairs, which would be my home, or right now I'm retired from my job, so it used to be in my job. But if someone were to ask me, "How did you stay abstinent for 40 years?" Okay. The big book says we have a spiritual malady, right? That is the root of my problem, right? The self-centeredness, that paragraph that I spoke about. Right. So the solution has to be a spiritual solution. Okay. So at one point, it actually doesn't become about the food. The food is something that I eat and I enjoy. But if I don't keep up the spiritual work, which is carrying the message, going to meetings, okay, doing my prayer and meditation, all that, thank you, all that will come back. Okay, so it's not about the steak that I eat or the fish that I eat. It's really about the spiritual malady. So I have to keep check and make sure that I'm not in this spiritual malady. And I want to just read something real quick, and this is how I'm going to finish. I found this paper online, and this guy described the spiritual malady. Okay. And there were some questions that he asked that he thought were good questions that we should ask about ourselves to make sure that we're not falling back into a relapse. Because you wondered through the years, right? You'll have someone, oh, I've been in OA for 20 years. All of a sudden, they go back out, right? So he has some questions. He says, has it been a while since we've taken another alcoholic through the steps? Has it been a while since you have gone through the steps? Have you ever taken all of AA's 12 steps? Have you done more than one four-step inventory? Have you completed all your nine-step amends wherever possible? Is there something wrong in your life that you will not face and make right? Is there a habit or indulgence you will not give up? Is there a person you will not forgive? Is there a wrong relationship in your life you will not give up? Is there a restitution you will not make? Is there something God has already told you to do that you will not obey? Are you working with the disciplines and practice of the 10th step and 11th? Right. So those are really good questions that we can ask ourselves, right? To make sure we don't fall back into the problem, which the big book says is the spiritual malady, right? And then what is that spiritual malady, right? The big book outlines it. It says it's being restless, irritable, and discontented. It's having trouble with personal relationships, not being able to control our emotional nature. Some of the stuff I already mentioned, being a prey or suffering from misery and depression, not being able to make a living, having feelings of uselessness, being full of fear, unhappiness, inability to be real help to other people, being like the actor who wants to run the whole show, being driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. Self will run riot, leading a double life, living like a tornado running through the lives of others, and exhibiting selfish and inconsiderate habits. So that's the spiritual malady, and that is our problem. So that's the way I used to live my life. And I try to the best of my ability to do the list, the 12 step and all this other stuff, so I stay away from the spiritual malady. Not stay away from the food. That's not the problem, right? It's the spiritual malady that the founders of AA said is the problem, So that's it.